harmonium is it? What's, do you know the combination? You know the combination?
Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Kodavani Pucharni Nivisesa Sanyavari Prashchachara Satani Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nittananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Sri Vashnari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So, very happy to be here. See all of you again. And we're going to begin with a little kirtan to purify the atmosphere. And with a melody you've never heard before. Are you excited?
Yes.
This melody is written by a friend of mine who is an incredible musician, actually famous. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, 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 Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
sing again, everyone together.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare,
congratulate the men who are here. I know it wasn't easy for you to come, and it may not be easy for you to stay, but let's give them a big hand. The reason I'm qualified to give this workshop is because I'm a terrible husband. And having been a terrible husband for many years, I had to either learn how to do it right or die. So as one who's had much trouble doing this and has also resisted dealing with it, I know how you might feel coming to a workshop on marriage. Because you have to deal with things that are not always so easy to deal with or so pleasant. Correct? Correct. So I'll try to make it as painless as possible, as far as I can, and make it fun. But I would like to encourage you that really a workshop about two people is really a workshop about one person, because how you are affects the other person. And it's really as much or even more of a workshop about developing yourself than it is about developing a relationship. So I would like to encourage you by saying that I believe that this might be the most life-changing, transformational 3 days you've ever spent in your entire life. What do you think about that? Does that sound good? Yeah, this is, we're going to, it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be like a marriage workshop that you may have anticipated. It's going to be a lot of looking at ourselves and understanding more about ourselves and why we do things. And also, the principles for relationship between the sexes are basically the same as relationship principles between everyone. So what you're learning here is going to help you outside your marriage as well. Because relationships are relationships. And there are certain principles and skills required to have good relationships. So you'll benefit personally, your marriage will benefit, and it'll benefit your other relationships. So that's my happy wife and me. She's not happy now because I'm not home, but we're dealing with it as best we can. Where do I point this? Point it at the computer? Okay, all right. So, is this being recorded on film? Not camera. Oh, over there, okay, yeah. So, this is being recorded. We'll make the recording available to you, and at the end of the workshop, everything we talk about is on a 25-page document, which we'll email to you. What about paper and pen? If we need paper to take notes. And tonight, turn your phones on, because you'll forget everything. Take notes on your phone, because there's a lot of important things that we're going to talk about, which I don't want you to forget if you don't have paper. I think the paper you have for questions would be better utilized for taking notes. One of the benefits of having workshops that go for hours and hours and hours that we get to talk about things that we never talk about. So if you need paper or a pen, raise your hand. We don't have pens, do we? You're fired. Every workshop we need paper and pen. Or you need to bring it. Anyway. What's so nice about doing a workshop for several days is we get to talk about things that we never talk about. I do a workshop on japa. We talk about our japa. Many of you attended my workshop. And we spent 3 days talking about forgiveness. We did a workshop on humility, how to deal with false ego. We talked about that. We did a self-development. We talk about things that are important that we normally don't talk about. So marriage is also something we don't always talk about because we're getting along with others. Sometimes it's difficult. So I don't want you to be afraid to talk. And I got some heads up information that you would be afraid to talk because these are, you know, they're difficult issues, sometimes embarrassing. But if you don't talk about it, it doesn't get better. There's a saying that you are only as sick as your secret. You're only as sick as what? As what? Are you alive and breathing? As sick as what? I need to hear you. You're only as sick as your... Thank you. So, what does that mean? You're only as sick as your secret. Who can tell me? Nobody knows. So how does that make you sick? No, but it's a secret, nobody knows. So why does that make you sick? Because you're not sharing, you keep it inside. You're not talking, you're not discussing. You know, sometimes we have problems and we solve them by discussion. Talk to a friend, right? So you keep your secret inside, you keep it in the dark, and no sunlight can shine on it. So it doesn't get sunlight, it doesn't heal. So I want to encourage you to participate. And the way you get the most from these workshops is through participation actively. Those of you who have come to my workshops before know that I don't do workshops about a topic. I do workshops to engage you in the topic. So you're not here to sit and learn about how to have a good marriage or a good relationship, but you're here to learn what to do with yourself and how to act in a way that you can have a good relationship. In other words, not just information. We're not here to gather information to walk out of the workshop with 20 pages of notes and I'll send you another 25 pages and you have information and nothing changes. So part of the process of changing is participation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I'm participating at 100% and I'm asking all of you to participate at 100%. And participation 100% means we're going to do exercises. And we need you to really get into it enthusiastically. How are you going to do it? Yeah, it's really important. Because what you're going to learn and what you're going to do could completely change your marriage, if you're married. It could completely change your marriage if you're going to get married. And it can empower you to help others that have problems. So what we're going to learn is really, really powerful. But the ultimate way you learn it is by doing the exercises enthusiastically and participating. So if you have questions, please ask them. If you have challenges in your life, in your marriage, in your relationships, bring them up. Don't be afraid that other people, that you'll be embarrassed. Bring them up. If you want to bring your question on a piece of paper, we can give you paper if you don't want to bring it up publicly. But A lot of these workshops on marriage, practically the whole time, there were just questions and discussion. I never even got through the last workshop I did. I have 50 slides. I only got to slide number 6 because there was so much discussion and question. So, is that okay? Okay, so this is a spiritually based marriage workshop. So, therefore, this is the principle. You want to read that together? Hold on a second. Okay, let's read it together. Marriage is not meant to make us happy. It is meant to make us holy. When we are holy, automatically we become happy. Something's wrong with this. Govinda. Is it the battery died already? I don't know. So, everybody gets married to become happy. Actually, we do everything to become happy, right? How many people do you know that are happy? Like, really happy. Now, that's rare. I think the people in Russia were happy when they were happier 30 years ago when they were poor and riding on bullock carts and didn't have smartphones. That's just my impression. It's hard to be happy. You know, the more you try, the more difficult it becomes. I suspect that people in Mauritius are more stressed out now than they were 30 years ago. You agree? It's hard to be happy, isn't it? But when you're holy, then you become happy. Why do marriages take place in churches and mosques and temples? Because they're actually holy actions, right? They're consecrated religiously. Traditionally, marriage has always been about religion. Two people coming together for what purpose? Ultimately, to help one another religiously or spiritually, right? And when you go up spiritually, your happiness goes up. Yes? Now, one of the biggest problems that I believe in marriage is that we are dependent on the other person to make us happy. That's why we got married, right? Why did you get married? Not to become miserable. You didn't go on a dating site to find someone who was completely incompatible with you and think, I want to marry that person. Did anybody think like that? That way, if I marry that person, I'll become detached, and if it doesn't work out, I won't care. No, nobody thinks like that. You get married to be happy. That's where the problem lies. But if you get married to become holy, then you become happy. Does that make sense? Anybody disagree? If you disagree, raise your hand. I don't mind. We can discuss it. One of my god sisters said, the purpose of being married is to be married. What does that mean? Because marriage is stable. It's a stable position. So if your marriage is not good, your life becomes unstable. Yep. Just like this microphone is unstable. You ever have a fight with your spouse and then you go to work and you're completely disturbed? Yes? Anybody? All of you? Sometimes? Yeah. So marriage is a very stabilizing position. And so when you have a good marriage, you're stable. You're more peaceful, right? Yes? You had a question? Why don't we give him the mic? Give him the mic that doesn't work. Let's see. This is a brand new system, but the reason these don't work is they're made in India. That's the whole problem, you know? You know the joke? The guy's going to hell and he has three choices, America, Europe, or India, and they tell him you should go to India.
Say, why? Well, because in every country, when you go to hell, they have a burning machine, a slicing machine, and a chopping machine. So he said, what's the difference with the hell in India? I said, well, the thing about India is the machines never work. Yes.
Yeah, I really quite don't agree with the first one. Marriage is not meant to make us happy. I would have preferred that marriage is made to make us happy and holy. I would have preferred that.
Can you tell me? I couldn't hear. Can you? You won't be happy if you're not holy. And if you try to be happy, you see, everybody has happiness wrong. Because if you try to make yourself happy, what do we say? Better give than receive, right? Okay, I'll give you an example. Let's say right now I said, we're going to change the program, and we have two choices. One choice is we're going to go to a poor part of Mauritius and we're going to feed people and we're going to help the poor people, give them clothes and medical aid and so forth. Or the other choice is to go to Jumbo Mall and go shopping. Woohoo! Who wants to go shopping? Right? So, and then we come back here 2 hours later. Who do you think is going to be happier and more fulfilled? The group that went shopping or the group that went to help the poor people? It's through service we become happy. Isn't it? You agree? Giving is better than receiving. So, when you make another person happy, you become happy. When you try to become happy for yourself, you get frustrated. You have that experience? You get it for a while, but it goes. So, the idea is, a holy marriage is a marriage in which you're serving. You serve your wife, she serves you. And that'll make you happy. But if you depend on her to make you happy, and she depends on you, there's going to be frustration. What do you think? Yes? No? Maybe? Think about it? Possible? Service is where happiness lies in service. In making other people happy. Just like, you think of some of the happiest people in the world. They're the ones making other people happy. Or let's say you have a lot of money. You say, money makes me happy. It's how you use the money that makes you happy. So if you have a lot of money and you use it to benefit others, it'll make you happy. If you just use it for yourself, it'll give you sensual pleasure. But deep satisfaction, you'll always be hankering for more, for something else. You agree? Well, you want, yeah. So, happiness is always a byproduct of something greater than the effort to find your own happiness. Happiness is always a byproduct of an effort greater, for a greater good than your own happiness. Right? Yes.
Some wise person said that happiness is about the heart, while
consciousness,
yeah. While sense gratification, yeah, is about the mind and the body.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's say, okay, I'll tell you a story. Who wants to hear a story? If you don't raise your hand, you have to go outside. So, there is a poor woman, she's a farmer, and she lives in a little hut. And one day when she was farming, she found a valuable gem worth millions of dollars, not rupees, dollars. So she put it in her little bag where she keeps her things, and she had some bread in her bag. And a poor man came by, and he saw the bread coming out of her bag. So he said, "Mother, I'm very hungry. Can I have some bread?" And she said, "Sure, of course." So she broke half the loaf of bread and gave him the bread. And then he saw that gem inside the bag. And guess what he said? He said, "Mother, can I have that gem?" And she said, "Sure, of course. Take it." And she gave it to him. And the next day,
he came back and he gave it back to her. And he said, I'm giving this back to you because I know you have something more valuable. And she said, what are you talking about? I'm a poor farmer. I live in this little hut. I have nothing more valuable than this. And he said, yes, you do. And she said, what are you talking about? What is it? He said, I would like what it was or what's inside of you that enabled you to give me this gem. That's what I want from you. So what you have inside of you in terms of your heart and consciousness is what makes you happy, not what you have externally. So for example, like those of you who came to the forgiveness workshop may remember, we did a little skit about kids carrying potatoes. How many, you remember that? So the teacher told her students, for every person you hate, write their name on a potato and bring the potatoes to school. So they brought their bags of potatoes, and she said, okay, now you have to carry the potatoes with you every day for a week, 24 hours a day. So it was a burden. It was difficult. And they had to sleep with them. They had to eat with them. And they had to bathe with them and go to class with them and do their sports and everything. So they suffered through the whole week. And she wanted to teach them a lesson that when you hate another person, you have to carry the hatred with you. The weight of it, or the smell of it. If the potatoes got wet, they started to smell. So Lord Buddha said, you're not going to be punished for your anger, but you'll be punished by it, because it's self-inflicted pain. So if I'm angry, or if I'm envious, jealous, it's self-inflicted pain. But if I'm forgiving, if I'm kind, compassionate, that's what I experience. I get to experience my own consciousness, right? So let's say I get something that's supposed to make me happy, like the new iPhone 6S Plus. Did it come to Mauritius yet? The Plus? How much does it cost? Only 34,000 rupees. I'll take 10 at that price, right? So if I get it, it'll make me happy. Unless I'm in a higher state of consciousness, it can't possibly make me happy. It can gratify me. It can make my life perhaps a little more convenient. But let's say I'm a jealous, envious, angry, resentful person. Will the iPhone 6 make me happy? You know, I'll come home tonight and I'll play with it for a few days, so I'll get gratification. But gratification and happiness are two different things, right? So if your consciousness is high, then your external situation won't determine so much your level of happiness. And if your consciousness is low, even you have a lot, you can't possibly be happy, because you can't buy happiness if your consciousness is low. If you're angry, if you're disturbed, if you're lamenting, you're depressed, you can have a beautiful house overlooking the ocean, and you won't be happy. The Dalai Lama said something about this, which is really interesting. He once went to Switzerland for a conference, and they put him in a penthouse on top of the Swiss Alps. So outside his balcony, he was thousands of feet up in the mountains. Really, really beautiful. You could imagine how beautiful it was, right? And he had this thought. He said, this is a really beautiful place, but if you're suicidal, then you'll think this is the ideal place to kill myself. So you're in a penthouse in Switzerland, you're supposed to be happy, right? That's supposed to make you happy. And if your consciousness is down here, then you're thinking, ideal place to kill myself. Isn't that interesting? Right? So one of the illusions or mistakes of our present culture is that we're being told, if you have things, you'll be happy. If you have position, you'll be happy. But it's not true. If you have higher consciousness, spiritual consciousness, God consciousness, you'll be happy. And if you don't, you'll just have gratification, but that's different than happiness, isn't it? They're two different things, right? You could eat chocolate ice cream, that'll make you happy for a while, right? I mean, it'll gratify you, but that's not real happiness, is it? Some of you are saying, yes, it is. And you understand what I mean, right? There's a difference between happiness and gratification. See, from the spiritual perspective, your spouse cannot fully gratify you. But if you serve them, you'll be gratified. That's how you become gratified. We have it backwards. You don't make me happy. You have to do this and I'll be happy. But you actually make yourself happy. More than another person making you happy, you make yourself happy. So if you are in an ideal environment where together you and your partner help and serve one another and create an environment where you can elevate your consciousness, then that holiness makes you happy. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes.
Is it a principle?
Yes.
So according to this principle, that means that if I want to become holy, I need to get married?
Not necessarily.
No.
If you become holy, you'll be happy, married or not. But generally, it's better to be married for most people because it's more stabilizing and balancing. But if you don't want to get married, you don't have to. I won't force you. But if you do get married, you just want to understand it's not just an institution to find personal material happiness, but it's an institution that's a sacred institution. It's to help one another elevate yourself spiritually. That's not so much understood, and that's where so many of the problems come.
But you need to find the good person.
Yeah, that's not easy. And you have to know what a good person is.
But sometimes you have to wait a lot of years to understand if it's a good person.
Maybe lifetimes.
In the fact.
If you want to find a good person, you have to know what a good person is. That's really important. So if you don't know what you're looking for, when the wrong person shows up, you might take them and later find out it's the wrong person. So it's good to wait. Don't be too anxious to just, you know, like if you're hungry, you'll eat anything, right? So if you get too desperate, you'll take anybody. And then you'll regret it. So anyway, if you want to marry a good man, if they've been to my workshop, they'll become good. And if they haven't, don't trust them. They're not certified. Okay. Okay, now this is a really important principle, and this is true in life in general. If you want a great marriage, you'll do what is necessary to get it. If you want an okay marriage, you'll just do enough to get by. If you don't care whether the marriage is good or not, you'll do little or nothing to make it better. You agree? This is true in life. If you're looking at your marriage right now and you're saying, well, my marriage, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. My wife hasn't thrown any pots at me in the last month. Or the woman says, well, my husband hasn't beat me up in the last month. Yeah, we did good this month, right? So if that's what you want to settle for, that's what you'll get. And if for you, marriage, it doesn't matter if you have a good relationship with your spouse or not. It's just, you know, as long as I don't get divorced and my kids become successful, then I consider that good. Then that's about all you'll get. It's the same with money. If you don't really need money or value money, you won't work that hard to get it, right? If you value it, you work harder to get it. If you value relationships, you work harder to get it. So, as a general principle, if you're married now, or you look at any relationship you have, the nature of that relationship is basically on the level that you want it to be, and you're putting in about that much effort to get it there. So if okay is okay, you'll just put in enough effort so it's okay. I mean, why waste your energy if you only care for okay, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, think about your marriage. Think about the level your marriage is on. And gentlemen, I have something shocking to tell you. However good you think your marriage is, your wife will rate it about 3 points lower than you. You'll always think it's better than she does. It's just, you know, I think my marriage is great, and my wife's like, no, it's not. You do this, and you do that, and you don't do this, and don't do that. And I thought it was like 10.10 or something, you know. She's like, no, it's about 4 or 5, you know. And I realize the reason she says that is because for me, I wasn't trying to make it 10. I just imagined it was, but it wasn't. And for me, 5's okay. So that's why it's 5, right? But for her, 5's not okay. So she's not happy with me. She wants me to try to make it 8 or 9 or 10. So when you want to make it an 8 or 9 or 10, you will do things that will help you make it an 8 or 9 or 10. If you want to make it a 5, you'll tend to just do what's necessary, right? Like, you know, we haven't had any fights this week. This was a good week. And you're like, you know, I'm thinking, that's like a dysfunctional marriage. That means you fight every week. And you're like, yeah, for the last 20 years, we fought every week. But this week we didn't fight, so it was a good week. So I'm happy, you know? So that's what you settle for. Does that make sense? So what I would suggest, in life in general, there's a saying, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. I mean, you're in it, you might as well do it right, do it better. So we're going to show you in this workshop ways you can make it really good. But if you don't want it to be really good, if you don't think it's necessary or important, you're probably not going to do them. If you just want your marriage to be okay, then you'll take the principles and you'll just do enough to make it okay. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Maybe? Yeah. So now, then the question comes, well, why should I make it great if okay is okay? If I can get by with okay, what's the point of making it great? I will tell you my experience. And this is especially relating to the devotees here who are part of ISKCON practicing Krishna consciousness. In spiritual philosophy, it teaches don't get too attached to anything or anybody, right? So naturally, if you get married, then if you don't understand this philosophy well, you'll think, well, I shouldn't get too attached to my spouse. Because if I do, that's not good, because as a spiritualist, you should be detached from everything. My experience is actually the exact opposite. That if I don't try to make my marriage really good, if I don't try to show affection and attachment to my wife, the marriage isn't good. And when the marriage isn't good, it makes my life difficult. Everything's hard because my wife's not happy, or my daughter's not happy, or they're complaining, or they're not satisfied with me, and everything's difficult. Does that make sense? So it's just the opposite. When everything's good, when the affection is strong, the attachment is there, everybody's happy, everything's stable, and my life is easier and better, and I'm actually more Krishna conscious when I'm attached than when I'm detached. Anybody confused? Am I going to get fired now for saying that? Does that sound wrong? I never read that anywhere. Yes?
I have a question, Prabhu.
Yes.
Wait.
I have to solve this one first. I got to make sure everybody understands this. That, you see, when you're married, the success of marriage is not to have a bad marriage. And you think, what does that mean? Some people will actually think the success of marriage is that it's not good, because if it's not good, then it means I'm detached. Does that sound weird? Anybody think like that? Some people do, right? So the better it is, the more peaceful you are, the more stable you are, So, therefore, that's why I suggest work on your marriage to make it really, really good, really, really successful, because it will actually help you in so many ways in your life. And there are lots of studies like this. Do you know married people live longer? Did you know that? They're healthier? Well, it depends on your marriage, I guess. But if you have a good marriage, you'll be healthier and you'll be more successful. Did you know that? There was actually a man, the 1930s, named, I think, John Unwin. He was trying to prove there is no benefit to being married. And he did lots and lots of research. And his research came up the opposite, that he found there were so many benefits. Yes, question.
Yes, Prabhu. I was just, I will take your point, which you mentioned that in Krishna consciousness, we are teaching not to get attached. But for Grihastha Ashram, it should not be like that. I'm sorry. Okay. For Grihastha Ashram, so...
Stay detached.
Yeah, is this the stage where we can be attached?
No, you have to be attached.
Yeah.
Because that's my point. It's not the stage to be detached.
That's
detached,
it, yeah.
Detached is before you're married and at the end of life. And the reason that marriages may not work is you become detached, because it's all about relationship. And how can you have a relationship if there's no attachment? So then if your wife's not happy, what happens to you? Does her happiness, level of happiness affect you? Of course it does. Does her anxiety affect you? Of course it does. So if you don't have an affectionate relationship, she's not happy. And then if she's not happy, that's going to disturb you. Right, and it'll disturb the kids, and the kids will see my parents aren't happy, and the whole thing's a mess. So actually, the Grihastha Ashram is for being attached, but attached in a way that we're also attached to God, to Krishna. Not just attached to one another. It's a whole synergistic process. There's you, your wife, your kids, and there's God. And so your attachment together creates an attachment to Him. And if you try to be detached while you're married, you're only trying to be detached from things that get in the way of your spiritual life, not from the relationship. The relationship, if you're materially attached, it could get in the way. But if you're spiritually attached, it won't. I'll give you an example. Even if you are detached, you have to be attached in the Grihastha Ashram. It's your service. Like, you can't be detached from your children. They'll go crazy, right? It's not healthy for them. So let's say you were very, very spiritually elevated, and just by nature, you were detached. You're like a yogi in your last life. You're completely detached. But you got married in this life. You have to show attachment. You have to show affection. That's part of your duty. You can't do it and not show affection. It won't work. Does that make sense? It's part of the dharma of being married. Even if you're detached, you have to show attachment. Because nobody can live without affection. Is that okay? And then when you're older, you start to retire, kids are grown up, you're not working anymore, and then you slowly detach. That's the time. And that's natural. Then it won't disturb the relationship. It'll actually foster it. Because that's what you do when you're older. Isn't it? Automatically you detach. Even if you're not spiritual, you detach. You give things away, you sell your home, you live in a smaller place. Right? Yes. Okay.
On the slides that you're talking, that's yes. Why I just yes. Want to mention it. I would say that a marriage, a relationship is never stable. So yeah, if you think that the relationship is stable, it's never stable. Either it's going up.
Yeah.
If it's not going up, then it's going down.
Yeah, that's true.
So just keep in mind that a relationship is never stable, and we have to strive every time and then to keep it up, yeah. Or else it is going down.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Relationship is dynamic. Because you can have everything can be great one day, right? And then you say the wrong thing, and the next day, big problem. Or vice versa. Yeah, it's true. But this principle still applies. because however you want to make your relationship, that's the amount of effort you're going to put into it. Because let's say, in your example, let's say, okay, the relationship's always changing, but for me, I just want to make it okay, so I'll only put in effort, enough effort every day to make it okay. I keep it from going to 4, I keep it at 5, right? And your wife wants it at 10 and you want it at 5. There's a problem, isn't it? Yes.
Prabhu, but it is very difficult to satisfy women.
There's some book, I heard a joke, there's some book, it says, anybody knows, like, man, how to figure out a woman's mind, and the book is like 14,000 pages, you know. Yeah. So he made a good point that it's very difficult to satisfy a woman, and I would say yes and no. And say that in our more traditional societies, when we lived with extended families, then our uncles and aunts, and they would guide us, they would show us. On our own, yeah, we don't really, most men don't know. Men and women are much different. And the same for women. It's difficult for women to understand men, it's difficult for men to understand women. And in our society today, where we have more of a nuclear family, we're getting less guidance. I'm not sure, but I would guess that a couple hundred years ago, there were probably no books on marriage. Nobody needed them because you had extended family. Now there's hundreds of books, right? Because we don't have extended family. Nobody's teaching us. My personal experience is exactly what you say. We don't really know how to satisfy women well. There's a funny, we can't get internet here. If someone has a mobile internet, we could show some funny slides. But there's one show on YouTube for a fictitious product called The Manslater, which is to translate women's language into men's language. So it shows the man, he wants to go out and play golf. And he says, honey, is it okay if I go out and play golf today? And she says, all right, do whatever you want. Then he's got his little machine, and he reads what the machine says, and the machine says, don't go out and play golf. And then she says, I'll be ready in 5 minutes. And the machine says, I'll be ready in 30 minutes. And it goes through various scenarios of a woman saying something which means one thing to a man and another thing to a woman. And he doesn't know. He needs help. So the purpose of this workshop is to give that kind of help, to learn what we normally don't naturally, intuitively know. Some of us know more. Some of us figure the opposite sex out better than others. So it's like he's saying, it's dynamic. It's always going to be a challenge to keep one another happy and please them. But I think we should feel it as our responsibility to do it if we're married, if we want to be married. And if we're failing, we should feel it's my responsibility. So if your wife's not happy, don't blame it on her. Think, I'm doing something wrong. Always see her as a reflection of you. So if she's not happy, always think, I'm doing something wrong. Because our instinct is, something's wrong with her. She should be happy. She has a nice house, she has a car, she has kids. I'm doing everything, she should be happy. But there's some things you're probably not doing. And that's why she's not happy. And so you need to understand. And it's not her fault, it's just how she is. You know, there's the sins of omission and the sins of commission. So sometimes we just don't do something that upsets them. And we're thinking, what did I do wrong? And she says, nothing. It's what you didn't do. It's not what you did, it's what you didn't do. How am I supposed to know I didn't do that? Well, you have to learn. Right? So hopefully we'll learn in the next few days. And this will make your life easier. And make your wife happier, and consequently you'll be happier. Right? She's happy. We have a saying in America, if mama isn't happy, nobody's happy. You have that saying here? Happy wife, happy life. Yeah. So, but it's the same thing. If the husband's not happy, the wife's not going to be happy. So, if you want to be married, you have to learn what makes another person happy. And don't blame it on them. It's always take their unhappiness as feedback. I mean, sometimes they may have personal issues or it's the wrong time of month or something. But generally, take it as, you know, something I'm doing. Is that okay? If you do that, you'll be a good husband or a good wife. But if you blame it on, if you think their unhappiness is always their fault and you haven't done anything wrong, then you're not taking the responsibility to be a good husband. It's like if you get married, you have to learn how to do it. Otherwise, don't get married. It's so much easier. You know, there was a man, he's a Christian, he does a workshop on marriage, and he said, I have the solution to all marriage problems. It's right in the Bible. Jesus said, it's better not to marry. That solves all your marriage problems, right? So, but if you do it, then you have to, you know, you want to fly an airplane, probably you should learn how to fly it before you take off, right? So you want to fly a marriage? Most people, we just get married because we think we'll be happy and we don't think we have much more responsibility than, you know, to provide, or the wife, you know, keep the house clean and cook. But there's so much more that we have to learn, okay? Are you ready to learn? Are you excited? You don't look very excited. You coming back tomorrow? Okay, this workshop is about you. Don't focus on your partner or the opposite sex in general. Focus on improving yourself. If you improve, your partner will improve. Now, if you do a couples workshop and you're sitting next to your wife, then I could say, don't listen with your elbows. And that what that means is, when I'm talking about how women should be submissive and kind, the husband's going, you hear that? And when I'm talking about how the husband should be emotionally supportive, he should listen and so forth, the wife's going, you hear that? Right? So then, now, those of you who are devotees, you read scriptures and you have the same thing. You read the chapter about marriage and the only thing the man remembers is how the woman should be. And the only thing the woman remembers is how the man should be. But the chapter, the points about the men were supposed to be for the men. And the points about the women were supposed to be about the women. But the man remembers the points about the women and the woman remembers the points about the man. Yes or yes? And then your wife says, but didn't you read that part of the chapter where it talks about the men? He said, did it talk about men? I didn't notice that. Right? So this is a big problem because, as I was just saying, there's always this tendency to think the problem is the other person. Right? So in this workshop, I don't want you to come in thinking, okay, I can't wait to get home tonight and tell my wife everything I learned about how women should be like this or that, or can't wait to get tell my husband what I learned because he was too chicken to come here. So when I get home, I'm going to tell him what Mahatma said. You know Mahatma said a husband should be? No, that's not the point of the workshop. The point is, when I talk about men, the men listen, and it's for you. And when I talk about the women listen, and it's for you. But, of course, it's a lot easier for the man to hear about the women, right? And the women to hear about the men. But that doesn't help the relationship. You agree? Why are you all laughing? Because you do that? Isn't that weird? We're like so... We're so resistant to self-introspection, isn't it? And we just want to... If I can just fix my wife, then my marriage will be good. If I can just fix my husband, my marriage will be good. No, fix yourself. Right? If you improve, your partner will improve. That's just... There's the research I read lately. If you put two people together, the stronger person will influence the weaker person. And if you do brain scans, by being together, the stronger person will dominate, and they'll both have the same brain, whatever, brain waves, or like the emotions will start to be the same. Just by being in proximity, you don't have to say anything. Isn't that interesting? So you do have an effect on the person you're with, even if you don't say anything. So if you become kinder, you become a better spouse, it will affect them, there's no question. Even if they don't want to improve. Is that okay? Most of you think, well, I'm not going to improve, I don't want to try, unless they try, right? Some of you are here, maybe your spouse didn't want to come. He's like, I am the way I am. What's the use of a workshop? I'm never going to change, or I don't want to change, or whatever. And that's pretty discouraging, right? But if you become better, they'll change a little bit. Okay. Your past history or the condition of your relationship up to this point doesn't have to influence the future of your relationship. If you don't want to change, nothing will help you. And if you want to change, nothing will stop you. So this is just a little encouragement that if you came here thinking, I'm hopeless, I'll never be a good husband or wife, I just want to let you know there's hope for you. That how you've been up to this point, it doesn't matter. You can change. But nobody changes if they don't want to. You agree? You have to want to change. And so if you change, your spouse will be really happy. Or if you're going to get married, then if you learn how to be a good husband or wife, you can save yourself so much trouble. If you're going to get married, you have to be willing to change. How many of you are married here? Raise your hand. Do you agree with that? If you're going to be married, you're going to be willing to change, or you're going to have trouble? Yeah, well, does anybody disagree with that? Yeah, that's, you know, if you say I'm just the way I am, better don't get married, because you have to be willing to improve. Yes? Anybody here perfect? Raise your hand. If you're perfect, you don't have to change. And if you're not willing to change, you're going to spend your whole marriage trying to change your spouse. Yes? You try that? Have you tried? Does it work? How many years did it take you to realize it doesn't work? I still haven't realized. Yeah, it doesn't work. They have to change on their own. So you change. Okay, so this is really important. How important is this? Really important, because I can't help you if you don't want to change. Even God can't change you if you don't want to change. You know that? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I reciprocate according to what you want. And if you don't want to change, I will leave you alone. I'll let you be the way you want to be. Right? Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. And I would like to add something.
Okay.
Just before that, someone mentioned that it's difficult to satisfy wife.
Yeah.
Your wife. So I would say that in this concept of change, in fact, it does not come how you are going to change the other person. Just by improving yourself, you will be keeping the other person happy. This is the point.
Definitely, yeah.
Because...
Okay, let's do a survey. Ladies, how many of you would like to see your husbands change? Raise your hand. They're afraid because if we take a picture and show their husband... Okay, this is how we'll do this. This is how we'll do this. Everybody close your eyes. Close your eyes. I'm the only one who's going to see, and I won't tell your husband. Okay, close your eyes. We'll ask the same question. How many ladies would you like to change your husband? Okay, close your eyes. Now they're starting to raise their hand. Okay, everyone would, and probably every man would like to see his wife change. And that's a huge problem in a relationship. As you say, if you focus on yourself, that is the solution. Yes?
Well, this is change management.
isn't it?
What's
it's
that?
Change management.
Change management. Change management. It's belief management also, that you believe that you can change.
Yeah.
That has to be there.
That's one end of it. It's change management, that you desire to change.
Yes.
But there's another strong influence is that each one, we have our own nature.
Yes. Okay.
And how does this come into play?
Perfect question. Okay. There's some things, like you're saying, you can't change. It's like you're an introvert, right? So, or you're an extrovert, or you have a certain personality. No, that's just the way you are. And there are other things that are just conditioned, just habits or nature that you picked up, but you can change. You can improve. So then now you're asking the question about those things you can't change. I have a really good answer, and this is based on my personal experience. You may have a certain nature, but if that nature is a disturbance to your wife, you can act differently even without changing. Just like, for example, let's say you're an extrovert, and you just, you know, when you go out to weddings with your family, you just talk the whole time, and you drive people crazy. So your wife says, you know, there's a wedding you're going to this weekend, and your wife says, can you do me a favor? Just don't talk to him. Just listen, because it's so embarrassing to be with you, because you're just talking. All right, so it's not your nature, but you think, okay, it's embarrassing to her, I don't want to embarrass her, so I'll act like an introvert. I'll just, you know, when I come home, I'll start talking, but to satisfy her, I'll be an introvert. We can do that. You agree? Yeah, we can do that. It's not, you haven't changed your nature. You wouldn't be able to do that every day. But in this situation, to satisfy her, you do that. You might be a very reclusive person. You like being alone. But your wife says, look, you're always alone. You need to come out of your room sometimes and just let us know you're alive, right? Just come out and say, hi, I'm still breathing, and then go back in the room. You know, like every 4 hours. If you do that, we'll be happy. So you might be this kind of reclusive person who just, you know, is reading and writing and planning to take over the world or whatever. But you're part of a family, so you have to become part of that unit. And at least for part of the day, a few hours here and there, you have to do that. Or you'll have to leave your room sometimes and just, you know, go out with your family on a vacation. So you can do that. And I think that's something people don't realize, that they can act against their nature in circumstances if they really believe that it's important for the family or for the wife to do that. And I think it's a really important principle, that if we're married, we have to be willing to compromise even when it's difficult. I have to do that. I'm that reclusive person. So I have to come out and say, hello, I'm still breathing. Does that make sense? It's a very, very powerful principle. Another powerful principle, which some of these principles will come up later, but another powerful principle in relation to this is acting on the basis of how you feel as opposed to acting on the basis of what's right. Most of us act on how we feel rather than act on our values. Does that make sense? Like, I have values. My values to be kind, to be honest, to be communicative, to be humble, and so forth. Am I always humble, honest? Do I always communicate? Not always. Do I always feel like doing that? No. Should I act on how I feel? No. How many of us act on how we feel most of the time? Most of us, right? Yes? Why don't you do this? I don't feel like it. Why did you say that? Because I felt like it. But that hurt me. I know, but I felt like saying it. Yes? So this is really, really important. We want to connect with our values, and we want to have actions which align with our values, not align with our feelings. It's okay if your feelings are aligned with your values, then you act on your feelings. It's good. But if your feelings are not aligned with your values, then you're just acting kind of on your lower self. This is just how I feel. And then it becomes a problem. Or like you're saying, well, what if it's not my nature? Some of what's not our nature is just the material nature we need to elevate. Let's say you're a very critical person. All right, keep your criticisms inside of you. Don't speak them. It's right in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says, when you're envious or critical, it doesn't hurt the other person until you speak it. So don't speak it. Say, I can't help it, I'm always critical. Okay. You're always critical. Just don't speak it. Because that pierces the heart of another person. Does that make sense? Keep it to yourself. Yeah. Don't act on how you feel unless those feelings are aligned with your values. Act on your values. I feel like criticizing you, but my values are to appreciate. So I'm going to say something nice instead of criticize. Isn't that a better way to live? You agree? Yes or no? Or maybe. Yeah. It's a very important point. And another important point is, this is really good. If you're not paying attention, pay attention to this. This is really good. You're not going to feel your way into a better relationship. It's not about feelings, it's about actions. Actions are what create good relationships, not feelings. Because if it's feelings, one day your husband or wife's going to say, you know, I lost the feeling. But it's, you don't feel your way into a better relationship. You what? You act your way into a better relationship. It's what you're doing. If you have a friend, how does a relationship develop? It's through what you do, isn't it? All the good times you spend together, the bad times, the difficulties, how you help one another, your just conversations, everything. It's about what you're doing. If it's just about feelings, it's not going to create a strong bond. So, you know, I may feel like acting in a certain way, but if it's not good for the relationship, I don't do it. Because it's my actions that will create a good or bad relationship. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Whoa. Should we take a break now? You want a break? Okay, one more before you break. Did I scare anybody yet? Is everybody okay? We'll break in a minute. Yeah, we should take a... You don't need a break? Raise your hand if you want a break. Toilet, water. Okay. We'll get a break soon. Don't blame. Be the leader and act to make it better. Take responsibility for any failure. Focus on solutions, not on problems. I think. Okay. The worst thing you can do for a relationship is blame. If you want to ruin a relationship, this is how to do it. Guaranteed it works. If you don't believe me, go home and try it. It works like a charm. And the problem with blame is you're putting the responsibility for the relationship on the other person, and you're not looking at your portion of the problem. And if you don't look at your portion of the problem, you won't do anything to change. Yes or yes? You awake out there? Yes or yes? Yes. This is a huge problem. And the reason we blame others is because We don't want to look at ourselves, and we don't want to take responsibility for our portion of the problem. There's a saying, in any relationship that you had that's not working well, guess what? You were there. In any argument you ever had, guess what? You were in the argument, in case you didn't notice, right? So you always want to blame the other person, right? You are in the argument. It takes two to tango. You know what that means? Tango's a dance, right? If someone's arguing with you, you could say, I'm sorry. Or you can fight back. So you had something to do. You have to have something to do with it, right? So be a leader. Be a leader. Make it better means if there's a problem in the relationship, take responsibility yourself to do something to make it better. If both of you do that, super. Super, super. Right? And really, really important problem. We're going to take a break after I talk about this, but this is like hugely important. If you go to a marriage counselor, a typical marriage counselor will say, what's the problem? And you'll talk about your problems, right? Well, my wife's like this. No, my husband's like this. My wife does that. My husband does this. My wife doesn't do that. My husband doesn't do that. You talk about the problems, you come out of the counseling session more agitated and frustrated with one another than when you went in. Because all you're talking about is what you don't like. So that kind of marriage counseling is completely bogus. Because you don't solve problems by talking about them. You solve problems by talking about solutions and acting on them. Does that make sense? In the business world, they say there's a formula. Focus 5% of your energy and attention on the problem. Focus 95% on the solution. It's the same thing in your marriage. If you're focusing on what you don't like about your spouse, if you're focusing on what you don't like about the situation, guess what happens? Gets worse. Right? What you focus on expands. You never, ever, ever want to focus on what you don't want. You always want to focus on what you want. Because if you focus on what you don't want, you get more of what you don't want. Right? Okay, let's give an example. I can barely pay my bills, right? So every month I'm focused on, I hope I don't go bankrupt this month. I'm focusing on what I don't want, as opposed to, I hope I become rich and wealthy this month. That's a better focus, isn't it? So if I focus on, I hope I don't become bankrupt, what happens? I probably become bankrupt, because that's where I'm focused. And you tend to create more of what you focus on. Yes? Right? So, you get two people together, they're not getting along, they're not happy with one another, this, that, and the next thing. They're blaming one another, they're doing all the things wrong that we just said, and they come to Mahatma. Mahatma says, tell me three things you can do to make it better. Each of you, right? And how will you implement them, and when will you start implementing them? Don't you think that's better than talking about the problems? Right? Okay, you recognize here's a problem. You know, we're not getting it. We're not talking much with one another. It seems like we're disturbed with one another. Okay, let's talk about solutions. Maybe we need to get away, take a walk on the beach and talk about this, how we can improve. You always want to talk about solutions. It's so important. Most of us, unfortunately, I don't know why, but most of us tend to focus on negatives, things we don't like, rather than things we like. Isn't it? Things we don't like about people, things we don't like about ourselves, things we don't like about the government, things we don't like about this and that. We tend to be extremely negative, and it's counterproductive. I'll give you another guaranteed formula. If you focus on something you don't like continually over a period of time, you will get frustrated, agitated, and discouraged. Guaranteed, or your money back. You don't believe me? Try it. You've probably already done it, and you probably already know it works. Focus on what you don't like. You'll get agitated, frustrated, and discouraged. You agree? Yeah. So you don't want to focus on the problem. You don't want to focus on what you don't like about your marriage. You don't want to focus on what you don't like about your spouse. You want to focus on solutions. I teach a lot of workshops. I've come to the conclusion that most people don't know how to think. They think in ways that don't get them what they want. They think in ways that get them what they don't want. It's amazing how we think in wrong ways, and then we can't figure out why we're not getting what we want, and we're just thinking in negative, contrary ways. I'm going to tell you something really, really powerful. This is from another workshop I'm doing now. We're starting to do this in companies. This is really powerful, so pay attention. You're going to, this could like revolutionize your life. It's really, really powerful. Seriously. If you are envious of somebody, you tend to be extremely negative about the person and about what they achieved. Yes? Okay. So I'm envious of Girard Hari, hypothetically, let's say, because he drives a Mercedes. He doesn't. He drives a Peugeot, right? Peugeot. So who'd be envious of a Peugeot? But I used to have a Peugeot and it never worked. So let's say Girard Hari has a Mercedes-Benz, a four-story, 20,000-square-foot house on the beach in Tamarind, and this, that, and the next thing. And I am burning in envy. I'm green in envy because he has all the things I want, right? Now, what's the problem here? If you are negative about the things you want, how will you get them? Yes? Isn't that interesting? Let's say he's successful. He's done something that I want to do and I haven't been able to succeed. And I'm envious because he's succeeded. Now I'm negative about achieving the very thing I want to achieve. How can I achieve it if I'm negative? There's a man in America, he teaches a workshop on building wealth. How do you get money? And he only teaches about not what to do, but how to think. And he gave a nice example. He said, every person who doesn't care about money is broke. Every one of them. If you come up to some, he said, anyone who comes up to me and says, well, your money workshop is nice, but money's not that important. He says, and you're broke, right? And they say, yeah. Like we're saying, if you say, well, relationships aren't that important, and you don't have any good relationships, do you? No, I don't. Because why would you? They're not important, right? So he's saying, if you want to be rich, you're not the person who doesn't care, but if you want to be rich, and you see rich people, and you think, oh, they're filthy rich people, you don't like them, you're envious. He said, how can you become wealthy if you don't like wealthy people? Isn't that interesting? So he said something which I really like. He said, if you see some wealthy person, like a guy's driving a Jaguar or Mercedes or something, he gets out in a super expensive suit, and you want to be wealthy, go up to him and say, thank you, you're an inspiration. Because that creates positivity, doesn't it? Towards what you want. So the point I was making is that we don't know how to think. So if we're envious of someone, it's only because they have what we want. If he drives a 1972 Volkswagen, you know, that's ready to fall apart. I'm not envious, right? Because I don't want a 1972 Volkswagen. So I'm only envious because he has what I want, but I'm so foolish, I remain envious, and then I'm not able to get it because I've created a completely negative attitude towards the thing that I want. Isn't that interesting? So it's just one example of how we think in the wrong way. And you'll see in marriage life, if you have trouble, that's just because you're thinking in the wrong way. You're trying to get something, but you're doing the opposite, and you don't realize it. Is that good? That was worth coming to the whole workshop just to hear that. Because now if you analyze your life, you know, and see, anytime you create negativity towards something, what it does is anything that you're negative towards, anything you're against, takes away your energy. It just discourages you, drains you. Yes? Anything that you're for or positive about encourages you. Yes? That makes sense? You still awake? Yes or no? Whatever you're for gives you energy. Whatever you're against takes your energy away. And that's why when they asked Mother Teresa, will you go to an anti-war demonstration? She said, no. But if you have a peace rally, I'll come to that. I don't want to be against anything. I want to be for. Because if I'm against, it's negative. If I'm for, it's positive. Right? So everything you're against is just discouraging and frustrating you. And if you're looking at your spouse and your marriage, and this is bad, that's bad, you do this, you do that, how's that going to end up? But if you think, this isn't good, you give it one little bit of energy thought and you think, how can we solve this? What's the solution? What's positive? What can we do to make it better? That's smart. Yes? You agree? Is it smart? Anybody smart here? We're all pretty stupid sometimes. You agree? Smart? Smartphones. Yeah, that's why we have smartphones, because we're so stupid, right? And then we forget where we put our smartphone. Okay, yes?
Who can be a better leader, a husband or a wife?
You both have to be leaders. Because the point of leader here is in relation to, if there's a problem, set the example. Do the solution. Don't wait for the, you know, your wife may say, well, you're the leader, you should make the solution. But she should do it also. If you're not going to do it, then she does it. As far as roles, I guess your question is also, what are the roles? They're traditional roles, but the main thing is what works. So if you're supposed to be the leader, but you're not a good leader, and your wife's a good leader, and you're happy with that, it's not a problem. It's whatever works. Because you don't want the operation was successful and the patient died. You know, I'm going to take the lead, but my wife's as qualified or more so, and I'm okay if she leads. It's fine. No, I should take the lead. I'm the man. But then maybe it doesn't work. So don't be too attached to the roles if they're not working. That's a huge problem, especially nowadays. Okay, so we can take a break? 5 minutes? How long is 5 minutes in Mauritius? Every country has a different 5 minutes. So 5 minutes is 10 minutes, is that correct? So we'll see you back in 5 Mauritian minutes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Hare. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.
Okay, your 5 minutes is up. Before we continue, does anyone have any question? Doubt or argument? If there's anything I say that is not clear, or anything I say that maybe you don't agree with, raise your hand so we can discuss it. What I'm trying to do is discuss on a very practical level, and sometimes the practical may be at odds with what your philosophical understanding is. So if you're not clear, raise your hand. Yes.
Is everyone hearing well?
This is even, yeah, okay. Did you learn anything so far? Did I scare you? Not yet. It'll come, but I'm taking it slow. Okay. What you're going to learn in this workshop is extremely valuable, not just for your marriage, but for your life in general. And this is one such principle. We tend to run from what we resist dealing with most. Don't run from your problems, run into your problems. Can you make that a little lower? Just a little bit lower. Think of something you resist right now. You just don't want to think about. You don't want to deal with. Something you've been putting off, some problem perhaps in your marriage that's really difficult to deal with, or a problem at work. Just think of it right now. Something you don't want to deal with. Is it hard to think of it? You don't want to deal with it, so you must. You understand what I'm saying? If you don't want to deal with something, what do you do? How do you deal with it? You don't. That's how you deal with it. You don't. You put it off. Yes? Guys, what is the worst thing you could ever hear from your wife? We need to talk. You like hearing that? When your wife says, "We need to talk." Do you think, "Hey, I've been waiting to talk. I can't. Yeah, when do we start?" Yeah. Tell me, I want to hear about it. No. Guys don't like that, because when the wife says that, then it's like, "Uh-oh, what did I do wrong now?" You know, I'm going to get it. Yes? Yes, guys, you agree? Yeah. So the point is, and this is a very important point, anything we resist is the sign of what we most need to deal with. And the reason we resist it is because it's painful. That's the only reason we resist anything. Does that make sense? So, most of us, when there's a problem, we run away from it. We don't run into it. We run away from it, and we take the problem, we put it in the closet, and we close the door, and then we don't have to think about it. You ever done that? Some people who have financial trouble, they don't think about their financial trouble. They get the bills in the mail, they put them on the desk. They don't even want to open the bill. Right? And one day, they can't pay their bills, they're in a bad situation. And they have to face it. It's the only way they can solve it. Is to, you know, they talk to a financial advisor, and then they deal with it, and they make a plan to pay it off. It's the same with your marriage. If there's a problem, and there will be problems. You think a marriage exists that doesn't have problems? You only think that when you're on your honeymoon. Right? I just flew here from Mumbai.
It is full of honeymooners who have no idea what they're getting into. They have absolutely the faintest idea what marriage is. You agree? If you've been married for a while, you know when you're newly married, you have no idea. There will be problems. Some of you sitting here today do not like dealing with problems. So if there's a problem, you just shut down and you don't talk about it. You probably talk to your friends about it and complain, but you don't talk to your spouse about it. Or you just don't talk about it. And the problem continues and it continues, and it doesn't get better by running away from it. You agree? So you have to run into the problem to solve it. You can't run away from it and solve it. And we do that all the time. So when you have a problem in your marriage, run into it. And in this workshop, you're going to have to deal with some things. So I'm just asking you, don't run away from it. And if you run into it, you're going to be really happy you did, because then you can start solving problems. Does that make sense? Are you all excited now? Prabhu, I'm not coming back tomorrow. I don't want to deal with my problems, right? Your problems will never go away by not dealing with them. They will not go away. Only you will make believe they've gone away because you're suppressing them. But they're there. You have to understand this. They are there. In our forgiveness workshop, we did an exercise, and I asked everybody to feel what their resentment feels like, just to allow yourself to experience it. And come up with an image. What does it feel like? Does it feel like a knife in your heart? Does it feel like a weight on your shoulder? Does it feel like a rope around your neck? And no one in the workshop said that I was conscious of how this felt. Nobody said that. And I did the exercise just to show you how well you turn off your emotions. But if you turn them on and you feel, if you turn them on and you allow yourself to feel, you have to wait for him because everyone's looking at him now. I guess I'm not that beautiful, huh? If you allow yourself to feel the problem, you get motivated to solve it. And you don't know how bad your problem is till you allow yourself to feel it. If you try to suppress it, you tend not to deal with it. And you hope it'll go away, and it doesn't go away. And this is one of the causes of severe, serious marital problems. You just don't deal with it because you don't want, it's just painful. You don't want to confront it. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to acknowledge it. So when the wife says, we have to talk, it's like the husband's like, I don't want to believe there's any problem. Right? It's like, that's almost like dying for a husband, isn't it? Maybe it's worse. Dying might be easier, because then you don't have to listen to the problem. Honey, could I just take, cyanide now? Because that'd probably be easier than listening to what you're going to tell me. Because I really... I don't want to hear it. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know if I can deal with it. It's going to mean I have to change. It's painful. It's going to mean I have to admit that I've failed in some way. Men don't like to fail, do they? Here's a huge problem for men, and women are aware of this. Men are success-oriented. They want to conquer. They want to achieve. They want to obtain. Men, you agree? That's the male nature, right? But so many men succeed in the world but fail in their marriage because they don't think succeeding in their marriage really is that important. It's an imbalance. They succeed in their career and they fail in their marriage. That's why when the wife says, let's talk, like, I don't want to talk. Let me just go back to work and succeed. But men have to know it's as important to succeed in your marriage as it is to succeed in anything. And if you understand that, it makes a huge difference. Most men don't think that way. They don't think it's that important to succeed. It's just important to succeed in their career. It's as important to succeed in your marriage as it is your career. First comes private victory, then public victory. If you can't succeed in your relationship at home, means you're failing as a person. So don't think you're successful because you succeed in public while failing in private. You're not. Is that okay? Yeah, it's really important. This will help the men a lot because you try to succeed in your marriage as you succeed in anything. Okay. Now, we solve problems by talking about them with those who can keep what we say confidential. So, what does that mean? Be willing to be open and honest about your issues and challenges, and everything you hear must remain confidential. So, anyone who's sharing anything here will share with partners. You just keep it confidential. Don't share it with others. If it's private information, don't share it with anybody else here, and don't share it with anyone at home. If it's good information, then of course, if it's something positive, it's not a problem. If it's private and personal, unless the person allows you to share, keep it private. Because if we don't do that, then we will not feel comfortable sharing because we're afraid that other people are going to hear about it. Right? You remember the joke? Telefax, telephone, teletype. I mean, that's how you get messages out in tele-devotee. You don't know the joke? Well, they used to have this machine called telefax. Well, first they had telegraph. You know about telegraph? Or are you too young? Morse code. They used that in the military. So somebody would be tapping something like that. On the other end, they would hear it, and the codes had word meaning. Then they came up with this thing called teletype, where you type like on a typewriter that's connected to a phone, and it would type on a typewriter at the other office. It was the precursor to the fax. Telegraph, teletype, telefax, telephone, all means of communication. But the best means of communication is teledevotee. Because that will get the message out faster than any other form. Yes, you agree? And if you want super express, tell a female devotee. Guaranteed same day. What? Oh, telemarician, yeah. Okay, telemarician. Guaranteed same day delivery, right? So here, the point is, we need to talk, we need to discuss, we need to be open. Because if you talk about problems that you have personally that affect your relationship, you can solve them. And you're going to need to talk to somebody. And Sangha association is nourished by open-mindedness. But we have to maintain confidentiality so we feel free to be open-minded. Okay, does everyone agree? Whatever you hear stays here, or you just forget what you hear after you hear it. Okay. Falling in love. It is easy to fall in love. Any fool can do it. And every fool does it. But it's not easy to stay together in a good relationship. Once you fall in love, you will need to learn how to rise in love if you want to have a good marriage. If not, you will likely continue to fall, not in love, but into problems. And third, even if you are a compatible couple, marriage requires work. So, this is how it goes. When you fall in love, you know what's actually happening? It's hormones. Did you know that? Your hormones fall in love. That experience of love is a hormonal secretion. And it's an intoxicant.
And you know what it does? It makes you blind to the faults of the other person. Did you know that? If you've been married more than 2 years, you know that. Because after about 2 years, the secretions stop, and that's when you start seeing all the faults. So that feeling of love is actually, it's actually a chemical process. And the problem is, when you fall in love, everything just works. So you think, well, this marriage is going to be perfect, and we don't have to work on it because we naturally just get along. And that's an illusion. And if you don't work on your marriage, like you were saying, it's going to get better, it's going to get worse, but it's not going to stay the same. And so what so many people don't realize is, after getting married to that perfect guy or perfect girl and everything is great and everything's working and we're so happy together, they don't realize it's not going to stay that way. They don't realize at some point they're going to start seeing the other side of the person, because everyone has an other side. Yes? Do you have another side? You have your public persona. That's how everybody sees you. But you have another side, and your wife or husband will soon see the other side. That's called your character, who you really are. So in public, you're looking good, you're kind, you're cool, you know, everybody likes you. But you're hiding your character, and she gets to see that. And she doesn't see it until the hormones stop secreting. And when she sees it, or he sees it, she says, "Oh my God, I had no idea." Yes? Oxytocin? Makes you, it's like a, yeah, painkiller, right? Makes you happy. So that's why they've done studies, and they found that people in love are more spaced out at work than people who smoke ganja. That if you'll get more work done smoking ganja than if you're in love. Because you'll just be sitting there in front of your computer like this. Just looking at the picture of her. And you can't work. It's true. It's intoxicant. So this is really important. Because people get married and they don't think they're going to have to work on anything. They think it's just, if I marry the right person, it's just going to work. Right? And so that's why these kinds of workshops are so important, because you learn what you have to do. And if you don't do it, then it doesn't work. Now, there's an illusion about being compatible. Like in Hinduism, if we want to get married, generally we do a compatibility chart. And we think, well, the chart says we're good, so hey, I don't have to do anything. Right? We're compatible. But compatibility doesn't mean you're going to have a good marriage. There are people who are not compatible who have good marriages, and people who are compatible have bad marriages, because you have to work on it, even if you're compatible. The more compatible you are, the easier it is to work on it. The less compatible you are, the more work it'll take. But compatibility is not a guarantee. So don't just think, well, the chart says it's worked. Did your chart say it was going to work? But it, you know, yeah, my chart said it was going to work, but it didn't. So, yes, that happens. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So how important do you think that the Vedic system of having a compatibility chart is?
We'll talk about it later. Actually, in the marriage, in the marriage manual I'm going to send you, there's a lot about compatibility and how it's not the most important thing. It's important, but the problem is it's not the most important. And if you put too much emphasis on it, it can actually harm the relationship because you rely too much on it. We'll talk about it more later. But if I, for some reason, forget, bring that question up. You really want me to talk about it now? Okay. Let me read something from the paper you're going to get.
Okay, I wrote this. I think I wrote this on the plane yesterday. Do compatible couples always have good marriages? No. Do incompatible couples always have bad marriages? No. Should we look for a compatible spouse? Yes. Compatibility is not the objective of marriage. Having a good relationship is the objective. That's the point. They're two different things. Compatibility is one thing. You can be compatible and have a bad relationship. Just like you and your husband can be compatible and be roommates. So you see one another once in a while. You don't really have a good relationship, but you haven't thrown any pots or knives at one another. You're compatible. You get along. There's no major problems. It's just you don't have a good relationship. So you can be compatible and not have a good relationship because you're not working on the relationship. Does that make sense? So compatibility is good, but it's not the goal of the marriage to be compatible. The goal is to have a good relationship. You want a good relationship. That's why you get married, right? Well, maybe some people get married for other reasons, but most people get married because they want a good relationship. Let me read a little more. See, here's the other thing about compatibility, which is really interesting. You got married when you were in your 20s, right? So you've been married how long? 23, 4, 5 years? Something like that. Are you different now than when you got married? Yeah. So compatibility changes to some degree. What keeps the marriage together? The relationship, not the compatibility. Because compatibility can fluctuate. Here's the best example I can give. I think it's a good example. I have many devotee friends from the 1970s. Who I was really close with. And those devotee friends, many of them left our movement, ISKCON, and went to other movements which are somewhat at odds with ISKCON or don't have the best relationships with ISKCON. So that's an incompatibility, right? But I'm friends with them because we have a good relationship. So despite the incompatibility, it's the relationship that keeps us going, even though we're in organizations that sometimes are not completely aligned with one another. And I think that happens in marriages also, right? Some marriages, people, their interests change, their lifestyles change. But if the relationship is strong, it continues through it. And if you give in to compatibility, sometimes when there's incompatibility, you give up on the relationship. But you don't have to. Does that make sense? You had a question?
Just to be clear, so being in love is not a big deal. It's not good, it's not bad, but the most important is to work on your relationship.
Yeah. Because being in love is, love is a verb. And so when you first fall in love, it's more of a feeling. And it doesn't take into consideration the realities of what it means to be married and what it requires to have a good relationship. And a lot of what's required to have a good relationship is working on yourself and also understanding the kind of person that you want to live with. So we have to be careful. Be careful who you fall in love with, because you might fall in love with the wrong person. Okay. What? Yeah, 1 second. I have a little advice to women. Don't fall in love with every guy who says, I love you. You have a question and you have a question. Oh, yeah.
Love is more important than anything else in a marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's love
because
is.
Even if you can work on a relationship, like, for example, arrange weddings, arrange a marriage that are arranged by the parents or the spiritual master or anything, you can build on a relationship. But without love,
well, that's the basis of the relationship. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
The relationship doesn't work, yeah, without affection. That's you see, the problem I see is that when people get hung up in things like roles, what's, you know, it's the role of the husband, the role of the wife, they get hung up on what's right, what's proper, then that can disturb the relationship. And when they're focused on the relationship, then everything they do will nourish the relationship. If they don't think the relationship is the essence, then they get focused on roles and duties and what's right, and the relationship gets harmed, or can get harmed. So if you focus on the relationship, then you'll have a methodology. Is this helping the relationship or is it harming it? Because so many times you'll get in a fight about what's right and the fight is disturbing the relationship. So does it matter if you're right if you destroy the relationship? Right? You understand, yeah. I'm right and I'm divorced. But at least I'm right. So you want to be right and divorced? Or you want a relation? You want to be married? Better be wrong and married than right and divorced. Yes?
Similar question. Here we're using love as a synonym for physical attraction. So in arranged marriages, we see that a lot of arranged marriages grow into love.
Yeah.
So how important, and the Bhagavatam recommends arranged marriages. So how important is the physical attraction?
The statistics on arranged marriages are, in the beginning they start out really slow, and after 5 years they're doing a lot better than the love marriages, which started out really hot. Prabhupada was asked by an American who didn't understand anything about arranged marriages, if it's arranged, how can there be love? Prabhupada said that love grows by service. So one of the things that becomes a problem in marriages is that people stop talking, they stop doing things together, they become more like roommates. And because they don't have interaction, then the relationship degrades. So relationships grow through interaction. Right? So Prabhupada said, naturally you're serving, there'll be interaction. So your question was, how important is physical attraction or physical chemistry?
Yes, because usually, sometimes in an arranged marriage, there may not be.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I mean, sometimes you may get it.
In the traditional.
Even if it's an arranged marriage, yeah. Maybe when they meet there will be, but maybe there's not.
It seems that arranged marriages can only really work well when that's what you really want and you're prepared for it. Because then the physical won't be so important, because the marriage will have a different meaning. I think it was Gorgo Vindamaraj or someone said, the first time I saw my wife was on our wedding day. But he was raised in a culture where that was normal. So you accept whoever God sends you, and that's your wife. And then you develop a relationship on a principle of service and working together for spiritual life. But in our culture now, it's all about how you look. And that's why we're having problems in our marriage. Because you're not going to look good forever. Right? I mean, you can try, but at a certain point, you're going to just not, it's not going to, that chemistry is not going to be there. So it has to be much deeper. So you have to be in the, you know, you have to be in the frame of mind to be ready for an arrangement. You have to think it's good and you have to like it and want it. And then you'll naturally, the affection will develop if there's compatibility. But if you don't want one and they force you into it, it doesn't work. You know, like for us as Americans, when we hear about arranged marriage, we just think it's the weirdest thing in the world. We think, how could that possibly work? But if you're raised in a culture that focuses on arranged marriages, it just makes sense. You don't have to worry. Your parents help find a person that they can see is going, you know, is the right person. So my daughter moved to India 5 years ago, and she's all about arranged marriage. It's totally normal for her. If she stayed in America, it wouldn't be. It's a different culture. And also, the question of how important is chemistry and attraction, it's also subjective. It may be more important for some than others. But it's shallow. It's shallow. It's very shallow. In our culture now, we're having a huge problem with divorce because there's so much emphasis on physical attraction. And because of that emphasis, you don't really, sometimes you don't really see the person because you're just attracted physically. And all the movies are about it, right? So you think that's what you're supposed to do. And marriages, you know, I read some survey about a year or two ago. And, you know, you generally think people would say that sex is important in marriage, but the latest survey I read is that it's not. They don't see that as something that central, but the relationship and the compatibility, that's what's important. These are people who are not devotees, not spiritual. That's what they're saying. We're okay? You ready to meet your husband or wife on the marriage day? Let me see if there's anything else. Yeah. Well, then the other issue of compatibility is when you get married and then you see the other side of that person, the side you didn't see, the side you don't like, what do you do now? You trade her or him in for a new model? Well, this model's defective. I want my money back. Here's a nice way to think of it. First thing you have to understand is everyone you marry has that other side. So if you want to get the part you like, you're going to get the part you don't like also. That's just the way it is. But you still get the part that you like. So that's the good news, right? You get the part you like with the part you don't like, so just celebrate the part you like and realize you just have to get the part you don't like also. That's just the way it is. The problem is when you start focusing on the part you don't like, isn't it? That's when you get yourself into trouble. So there may be so many things you don't like about your spouse, but think of all the things you like about them, the reason you married them, and keep that focus, and that will keep you going. I mean, unless obviously they're abusive or something, that's different. Yes?
A wedding between two persons with a different faith, is it dangerous?
Say that again. Two people that are...
with different faith.
Different?
Religion.
Religions. It depends on the individual. It depends on the individual. It depends how important it is for you. For some people it'll be a problem, for others it won't be. It's really, you have to meditate more yourself, more deeply on what's important to you and how that would play out and how religious the other person is. Like, you marry a man of a different faith, is he going to try to convert you? Do you want to be converted? Is he going to demand your kids are raised in that faith? See, the thing is, before you get married, you have to know what you want and you have to ask questions. I have a list of questions that every woman should ask a man. I'll send them to you. They're really good questions. And it's all the things that come up in marriage later on, and you ask them now, how are you going to deal with this? And how are you going to deal with that? And if I say I don't want kids, and 10 years later I say I want 3 kids, what are you going to do? Because that's likely to happen. And if I'm of this faith and you're of that faith, and I want our kid to be raised Catholic and you want him to be raised Hindu, how are you going to deal with it? You have to ask those questions, because they're real. Well, here's another scenario. You're of different faith. You're of the same faith, and then after 10 years of marriage, you change. You change your religion. Now what? How does he deal with that? Or he changes his religion. How do you deal with that? That's the compatibility versus relationship issue. When the relationship is strong, then the incompatibilities are less of an issue. When you're not focused on the relationship and you're focused more on compatibility, that's when you get more problems. That's why focusing on the relationship is so valuable, because it overrides compatibility. And that's why compatible people who don't focus on the relationship don't have good relationships, even though they're compatible. Does that make sense?
You said about abusive. So how does one...
Said about...
Abusive.
Abusive.
Yeah, so how does one deal...
With an abusive...
Yes.
...spouse? It depends on the abuse. The first thing I say about abuse is, if you have kids, here's what the research says. If a woman is being abused, especially physically, it does more damage to the kids than if they were abused physically by watching it, by watching their mother being abused. They're more psychologically damaged than if the father abused them. So that's number one. But let's take it even to it in a little different way for just the sake of discussion. Let's say it's not abusive, but let's say the relationship is very toxic, like you and your husband are always fighting. So what do your kids see? Your kids learn that in order to resolve conflict, you fight. But they don't learn that you talk. They learn that you fight. So your kids don't do what you tell them. They don't hear what you tell them. They hear what you do. And the greatest gift to your kids is a good relationship. You know, we want our kids to get the best schools and play sports and learn an instrument, and we're driving them around all day, spending all our money on them, and then we have a bad relationship with our spouse, and that does them more harm than anything. So that's very important to consider. If you have kids and you want an impetus to have a good relationship, this is a big impetus, because you are teaching them. You're teaching them how to be a husband. You're teaching them how to be a wife by how you treat your husband or wife. You're teaching them how to resolve conflict by how you do it. They don't hear what you say. They hear what you do. So, that's number one. Number two... These are just not only things that I've studied but observed. Number two, verbal abuse destroys self-esteem. So if you're in an abusive relationship where you're being put down constantly, you should understand your self-confidence and self-esteem is being eroded by that. And if you tolerate it too long, you're going to become somewhat dysfunctional. That's just a reality. Because you're hearing someone telling you all the time, you're bad, there's something wrong with you, you're stupid, you're an idiot. After a while, you're going to start believing it, and then you're going to act that way. Every relationship's different, so there's different ways to deal with it. I'm just looking at the consequences of it. If the abuse is physical, then the traditional Hindu idea of the ultimate tolerant wife is to tolerate it. the idea of the Western ideal is call the police and put your husband in jail. So, you know, it's probably somewhere in between, depending on who you are and how bad it is. But I would say that the idea of tolerance, like we say we should be tolerant, at the same time, there's some things we shouldn't tolerate because they're damaging. So we have to know if the tolerance is going to help the situation and at what point it's just, it's kind of hopeless. And to any woman that would come to me who's in an abusive situation, I would always say, is there anyone your husband trusts that will listen, that he can talk to? Because generally men who are abusive need help to stop it, to break that. And a lot of men who are abusive have been abused, and they're just, you know, they're damaged and they're damaging, so they need help. Another thing I've noticed with women in abusive relationships, if they confront their husbands and tell them that if you continue, this relationship's not going to work, sometimes their husbands snap out of it. Because a lot of men who are abusive think their wives will unlimitedly accept abuse, and that's why they do it. Whereas when the husband says, if you continue, it's over, that can be the very thing that stops them, because they thought they could get away with it, and she never complained. Then there is the idea of the wife who just accepts it, and because she's so saintly, her husband changes by seeing her saintly quality. But I'm not going to tell anybody exactly what to do. Those are just ideas. I mean, sometimes I do tell people what to do. If I see the abuse has destroyed them and destroying the family, then I would tell them, get away from it and see if your husband can rectify and get him in some kind of program where he can deal with his anger. Because it's an anger issue. Another thing, before you get married, see if your potential spouse has a history of abuse. Find out a little bit about what goes on in the family. I know one devotee, and I was helping his wife, and he's a very nice devotee, but occasionally he would hit her, he would lose control. And it was really hard for her because normally he was really sweet. But we later found out that he was beaten as a child. That's how he grew up. So he's a nice person, but he's got this problem. And he wasn't able to solve it, and she couldn't stay with him. And he even tried to solve it. He got some therapy, but he couldn't control it. So then it's her call. You want to live with a man like this, or you want to separate? What do you say?
In Mauritius, I've found that... This is definitely not for my husband. I've never heard a swear word from him. But I found that in general, the language is very crude.
Between husband and wife?
In general.
Everywhere.
Society.
Uh-huh.
So then it's
crude
very...
Crude means?
Swearing and calling bad names. It's very
normal
in society.
That's normal. Yeah, okay.
So when a husband does that to his wife, it would never been considered abuse.
Okay.
Because it's normal. But
so how do the wives take that? They're okay with that, or it bothers them?
Well, I guess some maybe. I mean,
but it's a bad example for the kids, for sure.
Yeah, and some wives may not take it.
Yeah,
some
right.
wives may take it as abuse.
Okay. So, when you like we were talking before, when you have a problem, the worst thing you can do is not talk about it. So let's say the husband's cursing and putting the wife down, and she says, listen, we got to talk. And hopefully he'll listen, although men are really bad at listening. And we'll talk about that later. But men need to be better at listening. And she has to say, you know, I know you talk this way with your friends and on the street, but please don't talk this way at home, because it doesn't help me. It hurts me, and I don't want the kids to hear it. So that's the first step. Anytime there's a problem, there's got to be discussion. not yelling and screaming. Stop that, don't talk that way to me. It's not the way we want to deal with it. But, you know, you have a culture at home. Every company has a culture, and every family has a culture, right? And you go to somebody's house, you kind of feel the culture, don't you? Take off your shoes. Oh, there's a deity there. Husband's very nice. They treat you well, or they're not. Or you hear yelling in the back, or every family has a culture. So, how do you want to raise your kids? What kind of culture do you want to raise them in? That's really important. So you may feel like abusive language is fine, but how's that affecting the family? In family culture gets passed down from family to family to family. Generally, if a child is abused, they'll grow up to abuse their children. That's just unfortunately how it is. And that keeps going, and that child will abuse, and it'll go down and down. So what they say is it'll continue through generations until one child decides, I'm not going to do that. So maybe the culture of your family was abusive, loud, everything was resolved through arguing, but you have to decide to do it differently because you don't believe in that, and you could change it. Otherwise, our nature is we're just like our parents. You're either going to be exactly like your parents or exactly the opposite, one or the other. And most of us are just like our parents, which is great if you have great parents, but if you don't agree with how they raised you, you have to change it. And you're having kids, so that's your service. Is that okay? Like if you want to adopt a child, you have to go through rigorous screening to make sure you're a good parent. But anyone can have kids without being screened. Yes.
Yes, Prabhu. I just wanted to add that about this culture which she mentioned.
Yes.
In the Mauritian society, I would just like to add that since our forefathers came to Mauritius as indentured laborers, they were more focused about just having a better life, and this was only possible
financially.
Yeah, financially, and this was only possible by giving their children education, which was they thought that this will give them a better life financially, which you mentioned, and it is still up to date. It's like that. We can see in this hall how many people are there here who want to learn about relationship. So,
are you making the point that they weren't so concerned about relationship? They
people
were just
in
more
Mauritius,
concerned?
Yeah, people in Mauritius, they don't know that they have to learn about relationship, mm-hmm. because they think that they know about relationship.
Okay.
So the issue is that we dedicate most of the of our lives. Learning things to get a job,
right.
and get money. Who is thinking that this relationship has the same value as the job you're doing? Because if you're not having a good relationship, everything else, it just becomes bogus in your life. So your life is not functional. You're not living a life if you don't have a relationship. So who is thinking that this knowledge about relationship is good? So if I will just have an estimation, just in the ISKCON, how many people are married and how many are present here, we just can have a percentage to see. I'm not blaming anyone. It's just that we don't realize that we have to learn relationships.
Yeah.
It doesn't come
well. It's
by
interesting.
Itself.
It's interesting, you know, because of all the workshops I do, this is not the most popular, and to me it's the most important, because as you say, it's the foundation of everything else. If you don't get this right, your whole life is unstable. And the other point I made is that people aren't thinking that being successful in married life is always that important, but being successful in the world is important. Yes.
Yeah, but on the flip side of this argument here, that we find that our institutions do not teach us about relationship.
Our and what?
Our institutions,
yeah, yeah.
Be it in the corporate world,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or wherever we are, I mean, or even at the university, we don't learn about relationship, and this is the governing factor of anyone's life, is relationship.
Totally. And you know what they found? I just read this book. It's called Humans Are Underrated. And it's about how computers are more efficient than humans, and in the future practically everything we can do can be done by a computer. But the one thing a computer can't do is have relationships, and relationships are and nothing great in the world was ever done by an individual, it was always done by a group. And how important relationships are to the success of any company, any organization, and how, as you say, there's so little training and how to develop relationships. My own experiences, and this book also said the same thing, when you have good dynamics with a group, it's intoxicating. You actually secrete intoxicating hormones. It's such a euphoric feeling to work well with a group, and then you become extremely productive, isn't it? Remember the first Janmashtami we had? We had the committee, you were on it, so many people. The big Janmashtami, it was super successful. Everybody was euphoric because we all worked so well together. And we could have never done that on our own. That's the power of working well. Yeah, it's extremely important. That's why in 1992, this book called Emotional Intelligence became like a landmark in the corporate world, because everybody thought it was about IQ, and then they realized, no, there's other forms of intelligence. Emotional intelligence is how you interact with other people and how you interact with yourself, how you deal with your own emotions and relationships. Then they found out that IQ, your skill in IQ, only accounts for 25% of your success. The 75% is your attitude, your relationships, your optimism, and your level of happiness. So, you know, things are changing slowly as this research is coming out. But we should have this room full, and we should do it every week for 10 weeks. It's, you know, until everybody goes through it. And we started working in corporations. I spent the month of October in Mexico, and I did a lot of presentations to companies. And one of the things we're trying to do with these companies is help them develop a culture of value. And we'd ask them, what's your culture? And they'd say, I don't know. We don't have one. Like every company, we ask, what's your culture? And they said, I don't have one. Of course, they do have a culture. They just don't have a culture that they articulated, but they have a default culture. Then I read another book about a company and said, we have a problem. We have these really brilliant people in our company, but they're not good in relationships. They don't share our company's values, so they're a detriment to our company, even though they're incredibly brilliant. We fire all of them. You know, so like in a relationship, you may be a great guy and smart and talented and just a really bad husband, and you drive your wife nuts, even though you have so many good qualities and everybody thinks you're this great guy. So it's the same thing. Great people that don't get along. So, here's my idea. Anyone who joins an organization needs to be trained up in the culture of that organization, and they need to learn how to have good relationships. Wouldn't that be better? If everyone in the organization learned the art of relationships, you know, when they come, before they're given any responsibility or even part of a community, you learn the values of that community and you learn how relationships work. I think that would be fantastic. And I'm trying to do that in my own way. But just as your company has a culture, your family has a culture, which is really interesting. So think about the culture of your family, the family you grew up in, and the family you're creating now or want to create. Think about the culture. What culture? What kind of culture do you want to have in your family? Everyone's open or everyone's hiding? Everyone talks by yelling? Everyone talks openly, calmly? Where people talk about their problems, where they don't, where they share, where they don't? Where you're together, you're never together? Because each of your families has a culture. And even the house you live in, the way it's arranged, will affect the culture. Yes? If you've moved to different houses, your culture and your family will be a little different. Two stories, one, somebody's upstairs, downstairs, you don't see one another so much. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, in their house, they put up curtains while they were waiting to put up doors, and they never put up doors. Yeah, maybe we should try that as a solution to all your problems. Take your doors down, put up curtains. You had a question? Yeah. Relationship is based on faith. Meaning?
I think relationship is based on faith. And if there is exploitation, there is no relationship. If there is faith, there is relationship. If there is exploitation, there is no relationship.
Yeah. It's based on respect also, and many things. But if there's respect, there will not be exploitation, for sure. But it goes back to this point that a lot of people are married and they don't want relationship. That's why they have bad marriages. Maybe you got married because your parents told you to. Maybe you got married because you were looking for something but you didn't find it. Maybe you're not good with relationships. Maybe you're very closed. So when you don't focus on the relationship, things go haywire. You become roommates. Sometimes, I knew one couple, they didn't speak to one another for a year. What kind of relationship is that? Okay, anything else? What? Anyone else have a question? All your questions will get answered anyway if we go through the PowerPoint. Yes.
How about people who are very reserved in a relationship? Like they don't try to solve problems with their partner, but instead they try to resolve on their own?
What happens? Is that good? Bad? Is it okay?
Yeah.
Ask your wife. Ask your partner. That's actually the answer. We'll talk about that later. There's a section on, yeah. You know, one of the interesting things I've learned, that, like you were saying, it's hard to please a woman, so then just ask them what pleases them. So it's the same thing with you. Let's say you like to solve a problem on your own. You say, okay, you know, I think we have this problem between us. Do you want to talk about it or should I solve it on my own? She'll say, she'll probably want to talk about it. But if you ask and you find out what their needs are, then you can fulfill their needs. A lot of spouses think their spouse should know what they need, but they don't know what you need all the time. You have to tell them. So this is what I need, or this is what I'm feeling. What should we do? That's how to deal with it. Yes.
My question is similar to the compatibility issue.
Compatibility issue, yeah.
Like a simile. Normally, how much importance do you account to Vastu in a house for harmony?
How much importance to Vastu? Vastu or astrology?
Vastu.
Vastu. Oh. The whole problem with you is the Vastu's bad. Turn the bed the other way, turn the desk the other way. I'll give you my personal opinion. This is just me, and you can take it or leave it. I think we put too much stock in Vastu and astrology, and it's good to a certain point, but if you take it too far, you become disempowered, because then you give in and say, well, it's my karma, it's my samskara, it's just the Vastu, and that's not intelligent, because then you'll give up making the effort to make it better if you feel that the forces of nature are punishing you in a certain way and there's nothing you can do. Because Krishna says there are five factors to action. One of the factors is karma, and one of the factors is endeavor. You have karma, but it's not carved in stone. There's variables to it depending on how you act and respond and new karma you create. And the reality is you can always make a relationship better. Maybe, okay, according to the karma or the samskara or the vastu, there's limitations. But within those limitations, there's going to be a higher and a lower. So, and how do you know exactly what the situation is? So you try your best. If you believe that you cannot make it any better, then that's, you'll fail, because you won't try. So that's the danger of putting too much faith in an absolute nature of astrology or vastu. I think it goes back to your desire. We were saying you get what you bargain for. What level do you want your marriage to be on? Whatever that level is, that's what you're going to strive to achieve. And as you strive to achieve higher levels, you'll get more intelligence what to do, and you'll get ability to change. You see, you want to change to please your spouse. That's the point. If you're going to be married, you have to be willing to change to please your spouse. If you're not willing to do that, don't get married. If you say, this is just how I am, don't get married. It won't bother anybody, except maybe some people at work. But you're going to have to be adaptable. And if you put too much stock in astrology or vastu, then you'll just say, this is how I am. And you won't make the effort to change. And that's a mistake. That's my personal experience. I've seen many, many people become disempowered by their belief in karma. They just don't try, because they say, well, it's my karma. How's your relationship with your wife? Oh, Prabhu, I got really bad marriage karma. Which is another way of saying, I'm just a jerk and, you know, I don't know how to be a good husband. But you don't want to admit that, so you say I have bad marriage karma. To which I would say, if you have bad marriage karma, then you have to try three times harder than the people who have good marriage karma. But if you go too much in this idea of destiny, then you'll say I have bad marriage karma, and then you don't try at all. What's the use of trying? I bet, you know, it's right there in my chart. Not going to ever have good relationships. Then you give up trying, which doesn't make sense, does it? To stop trying? well, in my, how come you don't work? Because in my chart it says I'll never have any money, so why should I work? And I don't have any money, which shows my chart is right. Right? Yes.
Yes, Haribol, Prabhu. Yes. But on the other hand, Prabhu trying, endeavoring too much to get over a happy marriage, which I consider personally that doesn't exist as such, because we are in the, we are in Kali Yuga, and it's like that. We have to have problems. We have to problems to realize that we are in a prison house, and we can't get ever to get comfortable in a prison house. That's what's your opinion about that?
My opinion is that sounds like a bona fide Hare Krishna. I go back to that other point. It's an ashram, and make the ashram perfect, you know. If you're a brahmachari, make it perfect. If you're grihastha, make it perfect. If you're a vanaprastha, whatever is perfect for that ashram, you do it. Prabhupada, once there was a, Prabhupada glorified a couple, an Indian couple, of how devoted the wife was, that she would kill herself when the husband died. He glorified that. Not that he would tell anybody to do that, but he said, look, she has so much love that she can't live without him. So he never denigrated that. And he said, in one letter he said, that this relation you have with your wife or your husband, it's permanent. So, as I said before, if you're disturbed in your ashram, you'll be disturbed in your life. Okay, we're not getting married so that we think everything's going to be perfect, but we're doing it to advance ourselves spiritually. And if you advance spiritually, that's perfect. That's perfection, right? Just like a spiritual principle is, do everything which helps you advance spiritually and avoid anything which is detrimental. So in marriage, if you do it right, it'll help you spiritually. So it'll follow that principle. So do everything in marriage that helps the relationship and avoid everything that harms the relationship. That's the principle. And then let what happened happens. But my point is, a lot of times we don't do that, but we just try to focus on what's right. Okay, you're the wife, you should do this. This is what's right. But that may not help the relationship. Then it disturbs your relationship, and then it disturbs you, and that affects you spiritually.
Whoa.
What? After I finish? Oh, yeah. We're having so much fun. It's 9:04. Okay. Well, at least I didn't scare anybody tonight. But we're going to have to stop now. Is that okay? Okay. So we're going to start tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And then we're going to go till 7. We're going to have prasadam. We're going to have dinner at 5. And we're going to start doing some exercises. And we're going to get to, you're going to get to start looking more at yourself and your... more about, you're going to get to understand yourself better. So I wanted to thank you for coming, all the brave people that showed up, and you didn't run away, you're still here. So, oh yes, do we have my CDs anywhere? Okay, can you put them out? Important announcement. I brought CDs of workshops. They're from like 10 to 30, 40 hours of workshops. And we have CDs on marriage, relationships, cooperation, men, women, and sexuality, and a few topics that all relate to relationships. And I have a new one out, is My Memories of Prabhupada, which you all must get. And you should all get the Sacred Union one, because that's lectures on what we're talking about. And he's going to put them out where? He's going to... There's a table outside, so he's going to put... I forget how much we charge. How much do we charge normally for the CDs?
10,000? No. 200? No. Okay. 100 or more. In America, it would be 300. Be 400 in America. So give what you can, and then give a little more, and we'll put them outside, and they'll be here tonight, and then they have to come up here. Or you can put them here. We'll put them somewhere. And if anyone has any questions, I'll be up here. You can come see me. And then Karunika is going to make some announcements. Oh, we have to get out of here.
So tomorrow is going to be a very long day. So please, everyone, please bring your water. And what we find when I give out sheets are very easily lost. So it's very nice if you bring your notebooks and your pens, because then the notebooks tend to last, you know, with you longer than a sheet of paper. So we will have paper for those who would like to ask questions, but I request you to please bring your notebooks. And I'm going to say something in Creole. N'oubliez qu'ils ont une prom, ça vraiment les est pour couvrir ban cost pour location, prabou son billet, prechad ban si dépense. Bien sûr, ça qui restait lial pour prabou, seulement les pas fait un bill d'akshina. Et normalement, quand nous recevons connaissance, le système védique c'est que nous donner. Alors, mon frère, ça coûte sa billet, ça coûte sa billet là, bien abordable, pour tous autres capables de participer. Mais toute personne qui est capable d'en en plus, s'il vous plaît, bravo, il y en a beaucoup de bons projets, les Grihasta, pour ce bon séminaire là, les faire son Griha. Et il y en a aussi beaucoup de projets dans la conscience de Krishna. Alors, pour toute personne qui est capable de donner plus, s'il vous plaît, votre corps donne Prabhu personnellement quand le séminaire finit, ou soit si vous venez demain, n'importe. Ok, merci beaucoup. Mon vie, I'd like to thank the devotees who cooked today. There's Mataji Gita cooked, Vaikuntha Prabhu cooked, and Navakishore Prabhu's spot sponsored and cooked. Thank you very much. A big Hari Ball to them. Hare Krishna.